Our final case for argument today is 21-2304, Secretary of Defense versus Raytheon. Mr. Volk, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Raytheon charged the government for about half the salaries of its in-house lobbyists and acquisition and divestiture team based on the absence of documentation showing that they spent the entirety of their time on those expressly unallowable activities. The inadequacy of Raytheon's record-keeping policy is dispositive of this entire case.
Wait a minute. I'm confused a little. I thought the main argument and issue joined with respect to lobbying was their use of this 40-hour, but it can only start at 8 a.m. and end at 5 p.m., so you can't. And that's sort of different than what you said. The issue you raised was quite global, and I thought the real nuts and bolts of the lobbying issue was the legal question that was presented in the briefs that I stated about the timing.
Your Honor, in the briefs we present, it's really three questions, and we write them down at the first page of our reply in a very clear way, I think. And the first question is the record keeping and the adequacy on a global basis as to both lobbying and the acquisition team, the record keeping, the way in which it's done, whether that in itself is satisfactory either for lobbying or the acquisition and divestitures.
I thought the way you stated point one on the first page of your reply brief, and I think the way that you started the argument, was not limited to the lobbying acquisition and divestiture records. I thought you were making the point, which is seemed rather broad, that record keeping requires records that affirmatively address each allowable cost, and that one cannot say our outfit does two things. We're going to keep one allowable, one not. We're going to keep records of the unallowable ones, and by definition, by subtraction, the allowable ones have just been documented, but not affirmatively. And that seems, are you making that broader point?
Yes. This appeal is only...
Why would that follow from the requirement of one of the early FAR provisions that you cite that just says you need adequate records? Sometimes, subtracting a small thing is perfect proof of the large thing that you're not individually counting.
So there's three record keeping provisions that we raise, starting with the first one, the general record keeping requirement in FAR 31.201-2D. This is for all costs. There needs to be adequate documentation to show that the costs are in compliance with the allowability rules. And so what that means is that you need records that show that these charges are allowable charges to the government. Raytheon only has records here to show what everyone agrees is not allowable. Raytheon has records of the lobbyist performing lobbying. It does not have any records.
But their argument response is, okay, well, we kept the negative, and therefore everything else is the positive.
That's not a permissible inference because the regulations require records, not only the general record.
But it's clear that the burden is on the government and not on Raytheon, and that seems to sort of throw what you've stated as an unassailable proposition sort of up in the air.
But the government meets its burden by showing that there's noncompliance with the regulations. So that starts with the record keeping by itself. If the government shows that the records that are required under the regulations aren't there, the government meets its burden. The board misses.
And what kind of records are we missing here? I mean, I get that they were excluding anything that was done before 8 a.m. and after 5 p.m. Are those the records that are missing?
No, that's not it. But that's really a separate problem. The records that are missing are the records that these lobbyists did something other than the unallowable lobbying. Raytheon is saying they do other things, but there are no records. Raytheon cannot point the court to a single record of any of these lobbyists doing some specific activity for some particular period of time. They're charging the government about half the salaries of their lobbyists, based on an inference that if the time was not accounted for by the lobbyist, it must be something that for which the Raytheon is allowed to charge the government for. There's no basis for that inference, and the regulations prohibit using an inference in place of the documentation that they require. Consider this, the lobbying-specific record-keeping provision, which refers to both allowable and unallowable. If Raytheon wants to charge the government for some of the salary of its lobbyists based on the contention that they do work other than the unallowable lobbying, it needs to keep records to show and allow audit verification under CAS 405 to show that these individuals are doing something. Unaccounted for time doesn't mean that it's allowable. Raytheon needs a record to show that there's an allowable basis to charge the government for some of these lobbyists' time, and it has no such record. Even if it could rely on inferences instead of records, the records that Raytheon kept are meaningless because its own policies regarding after-hours lobbying and the what it calls the bright line acquisition and divestiture thresholds, those gave the employees the wrong instructions as to how to decide whether to record an hour or not.
Can I ask you, just more standing back here, this case is maybe unusual, I hope it is, because this case has been going on for 15 years, right? And I assume, but I don't know, was Raytheon, do we know whether Raytheon was committing, dealing with the same practices even before 2007?
Yes.
And they're doing it afterwards. So we've got, I mean, if you were to prevail on any of your issues, we've got an insurmountable record problem, and certainly they weren't on notice. They won below, so they weren't on notice to necessarily change their practice, but they're just going to lose everything, right, because there are no records, and we're talking about 15 years looking backwards.
They're not going to be able to get from the government lobbying or acquisition salaries if they don't have a record, and that is my understanding, that for all these years, Even though they understood the government's position all these years, Raytheon has maintained the policy where, by design, it tells these employees.
I'm sorry, what you said, Raytheon's not going to be able to get from the government what?
Lobbying and acquisition salaries.
Right, but I thought your broader position is Raytheon's not going to be able to get from the government anything of any of the salaries in the government relations or A&D department because they don't have records of the non-lobbying, non-A&D.
That's right.
Okay, that's a much broader proposition.
I think that's the proposition I was explaining, that if they don't have a record, then it's not an allowable charge. It's never an allowable charge without a record. And it's not as though we have no idea what these costs are. They're salaries for lobbyists and acquisition personnel.
Well, it's government relations, and government relations can be broader than lobbying. You're right. Maybe it smells like it's an unallowable cost because they're lobbyists, but government relations can be broader, and certainly they're getting these contracts from the government. They're dealing with people on the Hill with respect to matters involving their contracts. Those would be allowable costs, correct?
There are no allowable costs we see with the records that exist. So take the goals and accomplishments that they prepared each year that are in the appendix that describe what they are trying to accomplish, what they did accomplish that year. We do not see any allowable activities in those records. So I go back to the point is that there's not a total absence of records here. There are records, but all of the records are with respect to the costs that they cannot charge the government. The records they keep to support the costs that they do charge the government for are records of what they say, what everyone agrees cannot be charged to the government.
So let's use the term record to mean a document that gives some evidence of something. Why are the documents that explain the variety of tasks that a government relations office employee does not adequate records, even though they keep no time for particular activities, but if they do keep particular time for the particular unallowable ones, the legislative lobbying, not executive branch lobbying or anything else, that's not prohibited. And by subtraction, there is a question, is there adequate proof that the remaining piece is allowable, even though there are no task-specific time-defining records? Why is that not a within 30, FAR 31.2012D?
Because there is no record. There is nothing. The only record that's there is what can't be charged. You don't have a record that says we did this and this is allowed.
I keep hearing a play on the term record. I don't mean timesheets. There is a set of employee job responsibilities which have material in it that are outside the lobbying activity, for example. No?
No, I don't. When we read, take for example the job descriptions at Appendix 3262 or the goals and accomplishments at Appendix 3494, look at the organizational goals for that lobbying or that government relations office. We do not find anything in there that discusses a cost for which it's proper to charge the government for. And with respect to the breadth of our claim, that's a key point. If this is some other office, if this is the accounting department where you have general records showing these people are hired to do accounting work, then yes, just recording the exceptions could be reasonable. But we have a situation in which these records...
So for the accounting department, I'm sorry, you're willing to pay for the salaries of the accounting people even if there are not time-specific records of, you know, of their doing accounting.
That's right, because there are records. They have general records that say this person was hired to do accounting work. This person is doing accounting work. There are records to show that. Those are the records on which those charges can be.
Wait, let me just clarify. So are you saying if you're in a department or you have a particular job and that job allows clearly on its face for unallowable as well as allowable costs, then it's okay to do the subtracting the unallowable costs? But if there's nothing on the face that deals with anything other than the unallowable costs, then you're going to have to make a showing? I'm just trying to see.
I think it's more complicated if you say the mixed department, where there's both unallowable and allowable happening in the same department.
Right.
In that case, I think you do need a record to say what the allowable activities are that the person is doing.
Goes back to Judge Taranto's question. But if the government relations, if their mantra says we do these six things, and those six things include three things that are allowable and three things that aren't, why can't you arrive at what's unallowable by subtracting the unallowable as opposed to necessarily computing the allowable?
There's no way to review that. We do not know what they did. They throw out all of these examples of what could have been, might have been done years ago. There's absolutely no way for the government
to
do that.
Can I ask you, before your time runs out, because I know the chief is going to cut us off. What about the second category? We've just been talking about lobbying. What about your argument with respect to record keeping and the corporate development or whatever it's called?
The record keeping there is exactly the same. What's different there is what Raytheon calls these bright line rules. And if you read FAR 31.205-27, we think it says unequivocally that merger and acquisition expenditures are not allowable.
So do we allow, if we were hypothetically to agree with your assessment of the bright line rule, does that allow all of the questions you're raising here with respect to record keeping? Is that the focus?
It wouldn't in that department, because if those are meaningless numbers, then they also, they're independent reasons why they don't support the charges that were made. If the thresholds, if the instructions that were given to the employees as to when to write down the number or not are not correct, then those nondescript tallies of hours or days don't mean anything, and that obviates the records issue for that department. And the same thing is true for...
And the net result of that bit of reasoning would be the government is not going to pay for any of the A&D department and any of the government relations department. I'm not sounding skeptical. That's
right.
Okay.
Okay, we'll save the rest of your time for rebuttal. Mr. Chesley. Is it Chesley?
Chesley, Your Honor.
Mr. Chesley, please proceed.
Thank you. May it please the Court. I have three key points which I think will underlie all the judges' questioning, and then I want to come directly to the records questioning. But the three key points are Raytheon kept records that were adequate and complied with the applicable FAR and CAS regulations.
That's just the conclusion. That's not a point. That's just fine for us.
And we're gonna go to directly judge to 201-2 and address that issue. But I do want to set this standard right. These are not just the time of lobbyists or lobbying or M&A professionals. These are two different offices that the board below found.
Where is the evidence of what these individuals did that would have been in the allowable category?
Well, so we can take it. I can start with, we ended on corporate development, so I can start there. So the government refers to this as the M&A office. That is not what the finding of Judge Scott was below. What Judge Scott said below, and I'm direct the court to Appendix 40, is that the primary role of that office was not mergers and acquisition, but rather, quote, working with business units and strategic development and growth opportunities. So the paradigm, as found by the board, and this is going to be my third point, is that the government proceeds as if there was no trial below and that there isn't substantial evidence.
Well, can you make that point with respect to the lobbying? What did the board find? What findings did they make with respect to the scope of activities performed by this government relations department?
It was actually
the record.
Sorry, Your Honor. I believe it actually fed right into Your Honor. I believe it was Your Honor's question, which is these are Washington professionals, which, yes, they do lobbying, and they withdrew that time. But they also are there in an advisory
capacity.
Where
is the evidence?
Just show me the pages.
Pages of the appendix, 23 to 26 of the appendix. And what the board, while the court is looking for these pages, what the board, and 26 is actually the summary page. So 23 to 26 is where they set forth the testimony, and then 26 is where they make the conclusions based on that testimony.
Yeah, it seems to me, well, I don't know, maybe I'll have to read it again, because it seems to me this is a lot about the PAC activities and the stuff they were doing, so I'm not finding right now what it has to do with non-love.
So the evidence that was presented by the board on page 26, as credited at page 26, is that there was gathering Washington or Pentagon.
You want to give me a paragraph number? I'm sorry.
Sure.
This is a very dense narrative here.
Paragraph 47. Okay. Government relations personnel engaged in some allowable non-lobbying activity. Whether an activity was lobbying or non-lobbying would be situationally dependent and evaluated on a case-by-case basis. And then that paragraph continues to show that if the professionals were gathering information about what was happening on the Hill and then communicating that back out to leadership and explaining perhaps...
And this was based on documentation in the record as to how much time these employees spent doing what they're said to have been doing in paragraph 47?
If I could pivot that and answer your question as well as the points Judge Toronto was asking earlier about the records, because it really comes down to a math equation. A plus B equals C. The costs that are at issue here are not in dispute. It's the allocation of those costs. But these are salary costs for indirect employees in the indirect cost pools. So the salaries are the costs. That's C. If you know either A or B, you know the other. So what Raytheon did was account for the unallowable time.
But that doesn't answer my question. Sorry about that. Okay. In 47, is there documentation in the record with respect to what these employees did and how much time they spent doing it with respect to these allowable tasks?
Well, there was a testimony. And the judge credited this testimony of four different Washington office professionals. And as this court knows, credibility findings are almost impenetrable on appeal. The judge had oversaw 2 weeks of testimony, 30 witnesses, about 10
witnesses. So they didn't keep the records. You're relying on the testimony that came out after the challenges here in the litigation.
Well, the records are the timesheets, uh-huh. And contemporaneously, the timesheets were supported by, and this is supported from 23 to 26, Each one of the professionals who testified to keeping their time contemporaneously, using their day planners, their calendar, their emails, and
did the timesheets comprehensively cover both all of each employee's activities, or the timesheets limited to recording the unallowable ones?
It was limited to recording the unallowable, and so if we go back to our math equation, so if you have
So Mr. Volk has I think, a couple of different arguments. Mm-hmm. One is if you were wrong about the 8-to-5 policy, then B is so unknown, you get nothing because you don't know what to subtract. Same thing on the A and D side. But he also has the point, not perhaps so much on the corporate development, I'm not sure, but at least as to the government relations, that we don't even have a record describing, not in a time-specific way, but describing a set of allowable activities.
So I do believe that the records do show allowable activities.
And record here, I think, does not mean testimony.
Right, but what one of the record problems we have here is that these records were kept in real time, and to Judge Probst's question earlier, this had been a recurring practice. These offices are audited every year. In fact, this court presided over a different Raytheon lobbying case in 2019, and that was only about the withdrawn lobbying portion. And there was an allocation approach there. So it had been the practice for years and years and years that they would only keep the time in this way. So DCAA did not collect the records that would have supported the timesheets, that would have underlined the timesheets.
And when you say in this way, meaning that they don't, individual employees only at some point in time say, this is what I did that was lobbying that shouldn't have been allowed. And no further record keeping as to what they did, how much time they devoted or what they devoted their other time to.
But that's what's required under the FAR and the CAS.
And that's just a question.
And what they did was exactly what is required under the FAR and the CAS.
Here's one of my problems. And Judge Probst tried to bring this up with Mr. Volk, and he kind of shut it down, which I didn't understand. One of their arguments that I found quite persuasive is that your lobbyists, like, for example, Mr. Neal on page 42, and you don't have to pull it up because I'm just going to say something that you're not going to object to. He testified that his job definitely was not limited to 8-to-5 and that he did lots of lobbying activities outside the 8-to-5 time period. And here I will read to you now from his testimony that he considered the functions he attended before 8 a.m. or after 5 p.m. to be part of his regular work duties. Okay, that's not objectionable, right? You agree that's what this record shows.
I don't have standing to object to, Your Honor. But I agree, but that the total time accounting issue is a little bit separate, but if I could come back. So FAR...
No, I didn't get to ask my question. You don't get to come back. So my question is, if somebody has a 40-hour hourly salary, 40 hours, and they're paid by the hour, right? You can keep track, if they're only working 40 hours, you can keep track, oh, I spent 27 hours doing lobbying, so I'll just charge the government for 13 hours, and 13 hours, divide by 40, figure out their hourly rate, that's the amount of money the government has to pay. Mm-hmm. But what you have clearly established on this record are salaried lobbyists who consider a regular part of their job to be more than a 40-hour work week, to be before 8 a.m. and after 5 p.m. Yet, all you had them keep track of was the number of lobbying hours they perform between 8 and 5. You then took a percentage of their salary, excluding the fact that their salary actually encompasses all of the work they do after hours, which you didn't have them record. And so you overcharged the government by a lot. You overcharged them because you assessed their hourly rate based on a 40-hour work week. But these men and women testified that they don't work 40-hour work week. They work beyond 5 p.m. and prior to 8 a.m. And yet you didn't figure out how many hours they worked to ensure the percentage of their salary that you were going to pass along to the government accurately reflected only allowable costs.
So I won't object, but I will respectfully disagree. So there are two options for accounting for time under the FAR and the CAS. There's what we call total time accounting, and then there's time paid accounting. nor the CAS prescribe a particular one. Contractors are left with the option. Raytheon elected...
You're required by the FAR to keep records that demonstrate how much time is spent on allowable costs, and you can only hand that cost off to the government. Is that correct?
Yes, but the finding was that there was no cost for this after-hours time. That's a factual finding by the board at pages 20 and 26.
What does that even mean?
It means that...
You're taking an actual percentage of a salary, mm-hmm. and you're splitting it into a lobbying portion and a non-lobbying portion, and you're not accurately measuring the lobbying portion.
We are accurately measuring because
they're ignoring a bunch of lobbying activity. That's a portion of the employee's work.
They are paid based on the 40-hour work week, and that's an accounting judgment that is not specific to
but
this
office.
But
they're paid based on the job that they do, and the job that they do regularly includes these after-hours events and attendance. That's part of their job responsibility. That's what they get measured for. If they break a leg on their way there, it's the employer's liable because they are your employee, and they're working on your stuff. So you decided, and I don't know why you picked 8 to 5 as opposed to 9 to 6 or whatever, but you all decided to create this fictitious, maybe that's a little strong, construct that only the stuff that they do within those hours matter, even though their jobs require as a regular part of their duties to do things outside of those hours.
If I could respond in two ways. One is that Raytheon had to keep its time this way because it disclosed to the government in its CAS disclosure statements that it used time-paid accounting. So it
no, Raytheon didn't have to keep its time this way. Raytheon could have complied in a direct manner right. with the FAR and recorded the things they did and the hours spent on them that were in fact allowable. Raytheon instead chose an indirect recording system, and this is a consequence of it, is your indirect recording system has resulted in an inability to truly assess what percentage of their salary should have been charged the government because what percentage of their time truly involved allowable activity.
If I can address, Your Honor, to the regulatory history between FAR 31205-22, and it's cited in the briefs, it is 49 Federal Register 18260. This issue came up in 1984 when the OMB was considering the cost principle, and what this court will see in looking at that is there was a comment as to there was a part of the rule that is no longer part of the rule. It had to do with 25%. There was a different record-keeping requirement based on whether 25% of your time was spent on lobbying. The OMB got a comment saying, is that 25% based on the 40-hour work week or the actual hours worked? And in response to that, the OMB changed the initial regulation to say 25% of compensated hours of employment. So OMB, in passing this regulation, considered this total time accounting versus time paid and said that you base the allocation on the 40-hour work week. What Raytheon did is...
Can I ask you, I've just been unclear on this. I really don't know the answer. Are all employees required to be at their desk at 8 o'clock and leave at 5? How do we know that these people who did a lot of evening work weren't coming in at 1 p.m.? Do they punch a clock there?
The testimony was before the board was that the hours weren't as important as much as the regular work day, and so it could be 9 to 6, it could be 10 to 7.
See how squirrely this sounds?
Your Honor, the board looked at this issue, and this is the government's case was exactly. But
whether it's clear error or substantial evidence, which neither of you seem to understand the meaning of, it seems wrong to me.
It's substantial evidence, Your Honor.
Can I just ask you one question before time runs out, and I'm going to ask the government this when it stands up, which is, assuming hypothetically we disagree with what the board said about the lobbying hours, and we disagree with Raytheon's bright line rule and think that was improper, is there anything left of this case? I mean, my real practical question is, do we have to get involved in the government's arguments about insufficient record keeping, or does a finding reversing the board on those two matters just blow up the case and it's over and we're done?
Well, what this court would have to find is that the board was wrong in finding that there was no unallowable cost charged to the government. And so may I have a moment to talk about corporate development, because we haven't had
Like 1 minute or less.
Okay. So corporate development is very different on the facts. So there, what the paradigm found by the board, and this goes to pages 40 and 41 of the appendix, is that corporate development was not an M&A shop. They were a strategy shop where they would work with the businesses to find out where the businesses are today and where their customers would be 5 years from now.
Yeah, the bottom line is FAR does not exempt early stage A&D planning. It explicitly encompasses reorganization planning. So I don't see how you don't lose on this issue. I'll cut your 40 for your 1 minute down to 10 seconds. Go ahead. How do you not lose? I mean, so, the FAR is clear. The language of the FAR clearly encompasses this.
No, because it's planning. If we look up Webster's definition of planning, plan is a method to achieving an end. So what the board credited with the testimony is that we don't know what the end is until we get to the acquisition council. And the way that they cycle through things is everything is economic planning, which is the general market planning for the business, until you decide that you're going to go with an organizational outcome, which is the unallowable -27. And Raytheon devoted incredible resources and foresight to addressing these issues in advance. And the board credited the fact they brought lawyers, government accountants, corporate development professionals together to come up with these rules to deal with
the pandemic. Does the FAR expressly exclude reorganization costs?
Reorganization costs, yes. Economic planning costs, no.
Okay, well, you're out of time. Is that, do you have anything?
No.
Okay, thank you. You have a little bit of rebuttal time, Mr. Volk, and he went over by about a minute, so we'll add a minute to your rebuttal time.
But before you get wound up in what you're going to say, could you just answer my question? This case, some of the stuff that the board found was not appealed, so that's law. And if we were to agree with the points that you know what I'm talking about, is there anything left of this case? Do we have to get into this record-keeping issue and what FAR requires and doesn't require?
No. There's independent
basis. That's a very good answer.
For reversal.
Anything else?
If the court decides that the after-hours policy and the bright-line M&A policy is wrong, that's the end of the case. The court can stop there. There's two independent issues. One is they're not writing down all the unallowables. That's the after-hours and the threshold for M&A. The second is they're not writing down any of the allowables. That's the record-keeping issue. And the court can deal with one or the other. It doesn't have to do both. I do want to make the point, though, that both of these issues lead to the same ending point, and that is that if these policies are accepted, the government cannot review the costs. They just have to accept them. They don't get to review what is claimed as allowable. They don't. There's no meaningful ability to determine how much of it was actually the unallowable. They just have to accept what these employees decided on their own, and that's not how this is supposed to work. The point of having these records is so that they can be reviewed, and if there are disagreements on the application of the FAR rules, then they can be decided, but not if there aren't any records. We want the court to review the policies. That's why we're here. These policies are not consistent with the law, and the court should reverse on the basis of the policies not being consistent with regulations.
I thank both counsel. This case is taken under submission.